views and opinions expressed in the following
drinks and gray in the park. All right, welcome back to Punkonomics. And
we're back.
We're back.
Right, so we were already, of course, continuing to talk, and God knows where we were. But let's reel all back and remember once again, you know, the
decline of empire, I think, is our overarching.
It's the period in which we live.
We're watching. Right? I mean, it has, of course, been declining since Britain and France were in the League of Nations, but. In 100 years, not much has changed in the sense that these old colonial areas that are mostly tribal. I've been reading a book by an Englishman on the Marsh Arabs, and the point being there that there's like thousands of tribal and ethnic relationships in what is called Iraq, and the notion that it's a country. Is only a European construct.
Right, it's imposed, absolutely, and often imposed with very clear and very clever cynical design in writing by those who drew the lines.
That's right, yeah, Kuwait's going to be...
Middle East Sykes-Picot Agreement.
Somewhere
France
else.
And England's broke it up in a way that will make it impossible to ever be really independent. And if there were any doubts, they took care of that too, by invading, by replacing government. But okay, so let's... Terrible tragedy in Paris. What are they going to do about it? François Hollande is an embattled socialist president, of course, for listeners, right? Socialism in Europe or in most parts of the world is not such a dirty word like it has been until very recently, taken out of the closet by Bernie Sanders. Good for him for that. It means democratic.
Except
kind
the Cameron
of mild...
people like to see it as a dirty thing.
Of course they do. I mean, even new Democrats in America, too, by the way, just new Democrats in Britain, though Cameron, of course, is Tory. But that's the language. This is a very mainstream, just like a Democratic Party. I mean, Hollande went to similar to Obama in many ways, got elected despite a lot of mistrust of the system by the French already. France is one of the richest countries in Europe, therefore it suffers much less. They haven't come for them yet, like they came from Greece and recently Portugal, which literally, by the way, the European central authorities tried to literally create a coup, like old school, right? Colonial.
Old kind of,
but there's been some nice legal political response. So for now, due to allegiances, it's a horrible story. We mentioned it a little bit last week. I mean, this notion of putting a pressure of not allowing the elected government to take office, because just like everywhere else, the majority of population votes for a government, including America, that is against austerity, that does not believe in, you know, giving more bailouts to the ultra powerful members of society, and on the backs of cutting the services for the weakest and most vulnerable.
Which is what the Greeks
The vast
did.
Majority yeah. of people in America, in France, in Greece, everywhere are against it because the people are not, you know, are not, what's the polite words that I can use on the radio? There probably isn't one.
And there's an austerity, there's the argument, right? The austerity is what's holding Britain back from having a better
America
economic
way,
response.
There could be a strong argument that, again, that Obama played this kind of, would have been expected, this kind of Republican, not even Diet Republican used to be the joke, right? Democrats, right. The Diet Republican.
Republican light, yeah.
Republican light.
Well, especially apparently there's fewer government jobs today than when he took office.
Oh, yeah, right.
Of course, there's been creeping up, you know, private sector jobs, whatever those are called, otherwise known as, you better pay me $15 an hour minimum wage because you're making me work in McDonald's.
And that's not what he was elected for by the population. So once again, hurrah for our democracy, you know, mass amounts of Americans went and voted and expressed themselves very clearly the kind of direction they want. And what they got is a great big finger. But from a very charming man who keeps saying
educated
a lot of
man.
Good things. Charming, right. A good politician. He reminds me, he does really remind me a lot of Ronald Reagan. A little bit more conservative, but very similar in style, by the way, in that kind of charisma and the likability. I mean, I guess, never mind, comparative presidency.
That is an interesting comparison.
So I think it's a strong, I think the comparison.
No, I totally disagree. That's okay.
Yeah, I would never compare. Yeah,
one was very good at reading his lines, and the other one is very good at creating his own.
I always wondered, was Reagan Obama really at least empty and think. An empty vessel, just a good deliverer?
I think it was a General Electric, wanted to have somebody out there. And,
okay, so that's so, there's a big difference. Because, no, I think
good-looking guy.
Obama,
you know,
is worse than in a sense.
Came off his horse and said, you know, come on, California. Actually, you know, he ran, because I was in California at the time, but he ran first on not allowing minorities to live next to white people.
But that somebody
houses.
Told him to run? You see what I'm saying? I'm saying,
he was supported by a bunch of used car dealers.
Obama is just as bad and even worse on every angle we want. Mm-hmm. He speaks to me too. Every time he talks to me, I get charmed.
Although you and I both agreed that of all the things that we could criticize him for, a good thing was the coming to grips with Iran.
Yeah.
And
my joke about it is that
when
he finally gotten rid of Clinton, maybe he managed
to
kind of like sneak in one single non-like rabid imperialistic policy in his 8 years in office. So yes, negotiating with Iran is absolutely necessary because Iran is the primary source of opposition to ISIS, by the way, so that you can't be keeping the people who are funding and supporting these murderous monsters in your good graces and alienate the only people who are actually fighting your sworn
right,
enemy.
Right.
I mean, it's like Alice in Wonderland on crack, right?
That's what's going to happen when Pakistan falls apart? I mean, Iran is the logical large country that's in that area, mm-hmm. and why wouldn't they want protection that Pakistan feels it needs from India, and India feels it needs from Pakistan and China, and so it takes that kind of intelligence, I think, that showed with Kerry and Obama to try and come to grips with a large. And how old is the Persian culture?
Don't
thousands
have time,
of years.
It's about the only one to qualify.
maybe. Well, certainly older than the Turks.
Sure, changed over in some ways, but still the same people. Hey, I got a hangout from Jay Gordon. He might call in, by the way. We'll see if he manages. But yeah, he's taking issue with you, actually. So Jay comes to the show every now and then. So he's a real radical, right? So he doesn't cut slack even by my standards. So he's saying, you know, that the Iran deal was a kind of a coup, right? That it was really kind of another relatively sophisticated. So let's give Obama that check game move to kind of weaken Iran. He's got a point.
Weaken in
what
sense?
Not some kind of notion of, oh, we have to get together, get over these baggages, these old hatreds, because our world is going up in flames, and it's all in our interest to come to some functional agreement, because, and I will go back to that, anybody who eventually, it's a matter of time until you realize, or you die, that there's no military solution to this. There's no way to solve this. Even if you want to take it to the extreme and you go in with nukes. So you're by yourself a few years only to get, you know, the mutant armies. Shout out to all the people playing Fallout 4 out there. And you are many. And good for you. Including my son. It'll come bite you in the rear. One way or another, there's no other solution. So we can give Obama some credit here, but maybe with a grain of salt that he's still caught up in this game of, oh, I will
let me put
the Russians in a corner and I'll put the Iranians in the position they can't.
There we go. So we got Jay on.
Yeah,
the phone.
All right. So he can take over from there. Yeah, I introed you already a little bit what you're going to say about the Iran deal not being as wonderful. But I would just say relatively, man, relatively.
It was a pretty, I don't know, I guess the Iran deal was a pretty raw deal I don't even think there was a relatively in it, because the assumption was that Iran did not have by everybody who was partaking in this. The assumption that everyone shared was that Iran, under the non-proliferation treaty, did not have any right whatsoever to enrich uranium. And I think the country just got tossed around and accepted this raw deal because it had far more scruples than the United States and the United States government.
Breaks my heart, but he's got a point.
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, my point about Pakistan having a bomb is that why wouldn't a country bordering them feel that they need, well, by the way, Israel has a bomb so it can protect itself. So why wouldn't a country in between two nuclear powers think about having
a nuclear weapon? Israel doesn't need a bomb to protect itself, quite frankly. It's an aggressive weapon, 100% aggressive, zero defense, certainly in this context. I mean, I can see, here we are defending Reagan, or I am at least, sorry about that.
You are right.
Yeah, we live in this insane world in which I'm defending, you know.
Reagan looks good compared to the Republicans running now.
I think he looks good compared to the Democrat in power now. I know I'm blunt about it, but I'm sorry. I don't see it. I mean, I was going with you guys, to say, yeah, at least he was playing negotiation. At least he. So it was an aggressive and not very, despite what people that criticize Obama differently than I and some others do, right? Say he came very much in a position of power. He played the bully. Yes, indeed. And you will never get stability through forcing the Iranians not to have a bomb while allowing the Israelis to continue a very destructive, hole in the ground. And have lots of nuclear weapons that they really don't need because Israel can take all the combined armies of the Middle East and probably most of Europe with conventional weapons rather easily just by sheer size of its army. That's not me being patriotic, heavens forbid.
No, I understand.
You know, it's just humongously strong and powerful military.
I was thinking they have a bomb as a doomsday.
A couple of hundred bombs.
Right. But they
have the nightmare, and I have this nightmare since leaving that Israel many, many years ago in 87. I had this nightmare that the next mushroom cloud in the world is going to be
in the Middle East.
Made. It's gonna, Israel going crazy, gonna getting into a crazy loop that lead it to decide that it's time to use that as a deterrence or something like that, or tactical levels maybe, not like Armageddon. But that used to be my nightmare, and it still is in a sense, because I think it is digging itself a deeper and deeper and deeper hole that, and not realizing that there's no military solution, and therefore the holes get deeper, and eventually there's no coming out, and then you have an entire country, which is the fifth biggest army in the world, basically behaving as a hopeless, insane refugee. That's a very scary scenario. But what about Saudi Arabia now, right? Stop the insane carnage that they are doing in Yemen.
Yeah.
But the Yemen is really an abhorrent case, and you know, they maintain support, not even a word of by the way, who's arming the jihadis in Iraq and Syria? ISIS. I mean, and you know, there's no real one group, just like Al-Qaeda. It's a very nobilis kind of creature, right? But who is fueling the conflict out of which come all these groups of crazies, desperados, warlords, and others? They are, right? So
Saudis, meaning that.
So it has to be that so maybe there's a break between Saudi and US a little bit in relations. It looks like there is not some of the low point in the relationship in some sense.
With the ISIS thing, it's pretty interesting. From what I understand, at least, Saudi Arabia cares about the Wahhabization of Sunni Islam and in its own borders, but in other places, and this was what was a scandal of Libya, right? So we invaded Libya to overthrow Gaddafi with Saudi Arabia, who, funded these Wahhabist Islamic groups in the region, and these Islamic fundamentalists who surprise, surprise. carried out a terrorist attack on the U.S. embassy. So, at least internationally, Saudi Arabia is still committed to the Wahhabization of Islam, and the United States, at least with the U.S. government, at least with fighting ISIS, isn't remotely serious about it. in any stretch of the imagination. I mean, mm-hmm. because they're undermining the people who are doing the best to fight ISIS. So they're undermining the Syrian government, the Assad regime, which is the last holdout.
What a world! When we
against the forces, and they're also undermining the PKK, the Kurdish group, at least with Turkey giving them intelligence on the.
No, yeah, we're maintaining it. There are solutions. I mean, there are solutions that have been, I mean, famously, I mean, our regular guest, Nicholas Sandy Davies, I think I scheduled because I wanted at least to start the show before, so I've tested the automatic posting on our blog because it just went up recently. He wrote an article, like a week ago. About summarizing very short a little bit about Syria's and prospects and you know there was peace along the lines that are now suggested.
This was in April 2012. April Accord.
And at the time it was I think again hard to decide why did we again I want to cry to say it out loud you know but why did we basically
walk
jeopardize
away
it jeopardize, you know jeopardize yeah. that I mean not jeopardize yeah sabotage that peace agreement. At the time, it was this whole like, oh, Assad has to go right away, you know, but who goes, you remember what happened in Iraq when we got rid of the bad guy? I mean, we have no problem with getting rid of him. But the vacuum behind letting millions of people stew in their misery, now we know what happens.
Libya. I mean,
Libya Egypt was relatively no need to invade it except for to get rid of like some 30 billion euro of Italian debt, I believe, was the prime reason for that. Right. And Clinton is riding this like she's some kind of humanitarian intervention, they called it. Oh, you know? I don't want to continue talking about that. Humanitarian intervention is...
But you're right, the removal of leaders... Egypt may have been sort of a, who knows, because the military had to take over Egypt in order to make sure that this didn't happen. So is that going
to
be the
actually, model? You have to say, again, there was, as often in the Middle East in the whole spring and already back in the days of, like, in Iran in 53, by the way.
Oh, yes, right, of course.
And then again Mossadegh, in 79 even, you know, and the Ayatollah and the clerics took over precisely because the young, urban, secular, pro-West, pro-America revolutionaries that toppled the Shah. I mean, you know, I mean, not pro-America anymore in Iran because the Shah was
our man. Yeah, right.
Exactly. But still definitely pro-Western kind of market democracy, were pushed aside by the clerics precisely because nobody handed them a hand and nobody handed a hand to anybody, in the Arab, so-called Arab Spring. And Egypt, those people made the revolution. Those were the ones who took the torture and the beatings more than everybody. It wasn't the revolution of the Muslim Brotherhood.
No, it was the Egyptian people.
But increasingly Muslim Brotherhoods did, individuals joined it. One could say that the Muslim Brotherhood kind of enjoyed, but they were fighting since the 50s against the tyrants for their freedom.
Sure.
I mean,
Nasser,
you might not like some of their style and maybe their religious beliefs, but I view all these religions equally. So they were faithful people. They are no ISIS. These are not crazy beheading the Muslim Brotherhood. These are people fighting for basic freedoms in a horrible dictatorial regime. And some of them were apparatchiks, as they used to say in the comments. They kind of pushed themselves into the forefront of this new liberty, democracy that they managed to eke out there. The army was playing them from day one. Candidate Clinton being particularly very close personally with the generals and all that. First, he tried to protect the status quo under Mubarak, calling for stability under dictatorship. At any rate, the Muslim Brotherhood government didn't do anything wrong. I mean, I'm uncomfortable. I would probably have immigrated as an Egyptian, maybe, because they are somewhat, you know, religious. But there was no persecution. There was a little bit of attention in some aspects that have always been there with the Copts.
Between the Coptic.
Yeah, but again, it was played up just like in Libya. There was no reason for the military recoup. It was kind of engineered. They were being... Again, it was a soft coup, essentially, only with a big military. So I don't like a Muslim Brotherhood government or a Christian Brotherhood or a Jewish Brotherhood or any kind of Brotherhood, even Iron Brotherhood. Shout out to Fallout 4 players again. Oh, dear. You have to laugh when you talk about these horrible things, right? Or you start crying. But again, we played the traditional game and we got ourselves even, you know, there wasn't a chance instead of reaching out an uncomfortable hand. We decided, no, we're going to go with the old model, and it's a failing model. There's no doubt right. about
it. Well, it wouldn't work in Syria anyhow. It
wouldn't work anywhere. Yeah.
Well, no, you're right.
You can't bomb people
working.
Into stability, frankly. You can't do it. If you, what's all that? Like fireworks out there? I mean, maybe I have played a little bit.
I thought it was you rubbing them.
Oh, it's me, Robbie. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Someone
like I said, my head
is
still like
is banging upstairs.
Cold medication so. and stuff.
Maybe they're setting up
something in the building.
Oh yeah, that's right. This is usually where we get all our secrets from campus.
I hope it's not a demonstration.
Well, maybe, but you know, and you know, so there's definitely we can look at the blame, and there's so much around everywhere. It really is. The question is, how do we move forward to kind of conflict resolution?
Well, you move forward to in a new situation, and that new situation is less water, fewer resources, a scramble for resources in an unstable, unpredictable. Now, you could always argue that it's been always unstable and unpredictable in the future, but I think the arguments that are made, especially if we go back to that Stern Commission report and the latest findings from UN Climate, is that it's abrupt climate change and unstable conditions are going to add to drought and flood victims. And you may actually need a military just to make sure that people have a place to go.
No, I mean, you know, I had this another nightmare scenario I used to not enjoy, you know, but like to share the pain maybe. For having studied economics at some point and looking at the development of the global markets over the past couple of decades, at some point, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, it kind of struck me that, oh my God, all the capital is in the rich world and all the labor is in the poor world. We allow capital to flow very freely. We, in fact, define globalization as allow capital to flow freely. So only people with investment portfolios get benefits from this globalization. Those of us who sell our labor can't. And so it's a deeply rigged system. And all
it's
of
a what
these,
kind of system?
It's a rigged system.
Oh, yeah.
And all of the multitudes of the population of the planet that do not share in the better part of the world, in the rich world, so the vast majority will start walking, whether it is from the falling apart Mexico, from, East Asia, West Asia.
Sure.
And look now, you know, from the Middle East, right? So we have many, many thousands, millions. Libya kind of launched it. Libya in history will be a much bigger chapter than it is in public discourse today. That was really the moment where we decided to go all out, all war, set the world on fire. That was going to, historically, we can argue that, you know.
Well,
Iraq,
Yugoslavia.
Afghanistan was,
Yugoslavia was a lot that way.
Yugoslavia
as well.
Was not pretty too. That Clinton administration can answer to that. Don't even start me on Rwanda and Congo. Clinton administration will answer to that. but what to do? Hollande is just another kind of, I promise, I tell the people what they want. He's really a French, certainly less charismatic and less handsome, than Obama, but a French version in a sense of, very establishment, kind of conservative, right. Tells the people what they want to hear. But now he will have to, he's in a very bad shape politically, very bad shape already, despite being relatively rich and therefore not suffering like Germany, Holland, the rest of Europe is not doing so well. Still, the right, the hard right, the reformed neo-Nazis, right? They've allowed their heads to grow stubble now. They're called the National Front. Are taken over. This will only further. They're the biggest party now. I mean, for the presidential,
are they?
Already
are they right?
Clearly the biggest before these attacks. Already.
Yes, they were, right, yeah.
Even the corrupt joke of Nicolas Sarkozy, it's as if George W. Bush would run again for president, but he's doing, even him is doing better than François Hollande. People are seeking, either giving up or seeking the small, more real parties on the right and on the left. I don't know.
So it's a fracturing of the French political.
And he will just go bomb crazy. Of course. I mean, that's the, Right? Wartime president, you know, that's the only hope he's got. So he's going to go all out now. So it's not only my nightmare that got me into fights back in the day, telling the French, don't worry so much about the actual bona fide neo-Nazis with the shaved heads and the Doc Martens. Worry about the respectable, educated, suited guys whose politics are slowly but surely moving towards the same kind of move. So it's not only the right, the French Republican, if you will, right, that are going that way. With a few, like in America, notable exceptions of kind of libertarian types that are, you know, a different animal altogether, that are just lumped in sometimes. So not only that, but even the socialists or the center left, like the Democrats in America, are embracing what the National Front was saying, they were saying, back 20 years ago. So that's very scary development. That combined with, the central bank putting the pressure on the president of Portugal not to allow an anti-austerity, i.e. left party, to form the government despite having the absolute majority. There you go. There it is. These are scary developments, but
grim, right?
It's very grim because I don't see people. It's part of what I like to call the cluster beep. Yeah, I mean that sounds like it's an easy combination. I'd like to open actually a program, but I don't know if even our new president is that open-minded. Cluster beep studies, CFS, but.
Can have a new college.
Everything's interconnected and interconnected and non-linear. So ways that kind of explode out of proportion. It's not like, oh, if we escalate a little bit, we get a little bit blowback. No, you can do and things blow up all of a sudden.
It's almost exponential. Exactly. Yeah.
All of a sudden we'll have 150 million people at the borders of Europe. Then what will they do? Take out the tactical nukes? That's the nightmare. What will Europe do? America has a relative, America's already with the Minutemen on the border, with the mass incarceration of immigrants.
No, building a wall. We're building a wall.
I think Europe will tend to be much worse than America in these things. They don't have a constitution.
Well, there's not even an agreement, right? We've seen in these refugees coming through Greece and Italy and Slovenia and now into France on the...
Very few into France, by the way.
But I thought there was an issue there trying to cross from Calais to Britain.
The legal numbers. The legal numbers allowed in are very small.
Very small.
Comparatively. Germans are doing, the most. But again, it doesn't matter, frankly. Okay, so the Germans were let in 1 million compared to the paltry, a couple of thousands that America and France are taking. 25,000, they said.
But
we're talking about 7 million already.
Well, there's this disconnect too, you're pointing out. We need the labor in the United States. And yet we're saying we don't want any more immigrants it's counterproductive, obviously, I didn't mean that in the literal sense, but I guess it turned out that way. But you've got this issue of, it's not a humanitarian crisis, alone. It's this issue, as you suggested, there's this concentration of capital in the West, but we don't want to have a concentration of labor in the West. And they're going to be drawn.
That's the thing that blows away often, students of economic history or pay attention, that it's not that we've already accumulated all this capital and back in the bad old days. We continue to suck capital out of the poorest, war-torn regions of the world every year. And again, we broadly, the more powerful.
Well, isn't this also the immigration issue a class issue in another sense?
Yes.
Insofar as you have the Republicans mobilizing the poor bases, stating that, these Mexicans are coming in,
taking their jobs,
and then you have the middle class who actually end up who like the immigration because of the cheap labor, so that they can get to get cheaper products like their iPhones, their iPads, their cameras, and so on,
clothes,
and clothes. you have that. That issue in both those senses.
Though it's not recognized, Jay. That's the thing. It's not recognized by the vast majority of the population. Certainly by no real political. Not even Bernie Sanders is going there.
That's right, right. But even what was it, Alabama or Mississippi, where they tried to stop the farm workers from coming from Latin America, and there's nobody to perishable goods. It's not like cotton. That's
yeah, but we don't need them. This is the horror. I mean, it's a little bit like in America, right? Like American life standard of living was always rising for some. Yeah, obviously
right.
not
but
for
now it's stagnant.
Africans.
Yeah, right.
But groups. But it's stagnant because, well, we needed the American labor force more than anywhere else, more than in Europe, because of all the richness that we took from the Indians, yeah? and the capital that we were bringing in through Europe, all the wealth of the American continent. So we needed people dramatically, so that there was the upward push in the long term for standard of living, Americans negotiating for better pay, better conditions, and having the back, you know, to be able to negotiate for it. For the past couple of decades, Americans really have been only consumers. We're not needed for workers anymore. We're needed to consume. We're not even needed for that anymore. And the poor multitudes of the planet that work are not even that, definitely losing even the need for them as kind of new world slaves to produce all those cheaper consumer goods. Even that racket is running out.
Well, this is somewhat the paradox of the decline of empire, right? Yeah. So you have as empire goes on the decline, you have this situation where to maintain its products, right? The things that it produces, right? It needs to extract more resources, but the resources that it extracts becomes more and more expensive to extract, right. And the products that they have become more and more expensive to maintain. So you have a situation an economic situation where there are no bankable projects per se. And this is why, with respect to climate change, we haven't seen any innovation. Now, of course, when an economy gets to the point where there are no bankable projects and you can't profit off of anything. So, like, there are lots of companies that don't run a profit. So Twitter hasn't run a profit. Amazon rarely profits off of anything. You know, I think Google and Microsoft are the same. You know, Microsoft profits off its licenses.
Profits is an oil.
Google profits off the advertising for search, but none of the projects that it builds, generates any profit. So in an economy, the rational thing to do is to turn toward, if you will, a gift economy or an economy not based, in profit. But we're not doing any of that at all.
No, we're not even having an argument about what to do.
No,
I mean,
that's
the thing. And I want to clarify, I was saying that we don't even need the manual, less and less the sweatshop labor.
Right.
A bit of a caveat in America, actually, in the sense that in America we desperately need those 12 million undocumented people. Again, for the current mechanism of the system. So like you were saying, this is the cluster B problem, right? That immigration cannot be solved without solving the climate and the global economic structures and institutions and radically change the very system that America uses.
And food and construction are probably the least mechanized at this point, even though we've had 50 years of mechanized home building.
Oh, it's
and
just
things,
beginning.
But,
I mean, it's just but, like apparently we're, right. we're just beginning to see the uptick in the past, the explosion is in the next 10 years, where pretty much everything other than poetry and art will be done by machines.
Will be done
or
by
will be
machines,
cheaply
right, right.
and effectively right. done by machines.
Although I noticed when they were putting a new roof on one of the buildings on campus, or on the Episcopal Church across the street, all the people working on the roof
are not...
Are immigrants, I'm
right,
sure.
Right.
And
contracting, I mean, people are professionals with what do you call that? Plumbing, framing, roofing, welding. Welding maybe less actually. But these sort of things is probably the best bet in terms of a profession. Because you're right. I mean,
the
last
niches, mechanized.
Those
yeah.
are the niches right. where it does maintain. Lawyering, on the other hand, is a very big mistake unless you bet on the fact that you're going to go straight to the top.
Right.
Because the unemployment rate is like 28% now
fixing computers and
that's just very odd. I mean, America specializes on getting the labor cheap. Yes. And if you have the qualifications, you're overqualified. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing that. Mm-hmm. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, that's directed at you.
That's even
well. And in the future, even this argument about whether college education is worth it in the future, I didn't think I'd live long enough for people to have that argument.
You know, I'm starting to find out that it's almost not even worth it. To be quite honest, also the fact that you enrich your life with the knowledge,
personal enrichment.
It doesn't do anything really for you if you're out there trying to find a job. I mean, right now, pretty much everybody I know got a job through their cousin or a friend. It's none of this, you know, going in face to face anymore, or even your application, your resume. Yeah. What do you do? Right. You know, and you're competing against these companies who, bottom line, is their profit. So they're willing to break the law, you know, hire people who are undocumented or illegal here, for no better terms, to apply to it. And then people like myself who actually, you know, belong to the so-called minority status as a Latino born here in the United States, Puerto Rican, we're getting the shaft. Mm-hmm. Literally.
Yeah.
Regardless of what education we have.
That's the future. That's what we can expect, delivered to us from our political economic system is different shafts from different directions. In different angles. Well, it's a failing system. That's a failing system.
But like you said, we're not even arguing which way it should go, right. And that's the real sad part of the.
It's not surprising historically. Well, in terms of the, I guess the educational structure, you know, I think it is useful, but I think
that education is useful, right.
But I think it's not beyond the personal enrichment. I don't think people see where it's useful. So, for example. I'll go ahead and give you an example. So like thinking logically and critically are useful things to have in a political sphere. And, you know, our politics with the two parties are in shambles right now. But I mean, if people would take that education to mobilize people to, you know, I guess turn their backs on the Democratic and Republican parties, and actually work together, and not through consensus or anything like that, but work together through a problem and decide on a collective action to a problem like climate change, you know, that can be very useful. But, you know, people don't think about it that way. They think about, you know, if we're looking at solutions to these big issues, we're thinking about, well, what can this big abstract bureaucracy that, you know, is impervious to shame help us to do? And I'm not saying to, you know, get rid of that big abstract government, but if there are things that we can act collectively on, we should use that to do it.
Let me hit on that a little bit, because you know, basically what you're saying is okay, probably the private or entrepreneurships of the world can take care of that a little bit better than the government. But the truth of the matter is, you know, social entrepreneurship is just another form of.
No, I'm not talking about entrepreneurship. I'm talking about, you know, public grassroots, public.
It's democracy. It's funny how we have to kind of run our mouth, you know, have to go around it.
Democracy is a valuable
if we
commodity,
want people
you know,
to actually be able to contribute to decision making.
Well,
that's
broad
definition.
I was thinking of livable wage or retrofitting, you know, homes. So it was, we were talking before.
Well, that's specific policies,
you know,
which
but people
good.
Have to come together to do
that. Right.
Co-op, actually.
Though you can't avoid, I mean, and I totally support as much as I can the, even when I disagree, even just that when people get together and, you know, look at the problem and try and do something about it, even if I happen to disagree, I support it. But so absolutely 100%, and this is necessary for democracy, and like I was saying before, nothing's left of it, pretty much.
Well, it can atrophy if you don't practice it.
But you can't get around the big picture. Yeah, I mean, there's only so much. So those grassroots little movements whether they end up having a goal that they achieve, like changing regulations on I don't know, allowing leasing of solar panels, like all over the United States, a private, very capitalistic way of doing things.
Or better yet, saving homes.
By big governments, Rick Sculpture.
Sure, saving homes from foreclosure. Is another, you know, banding together to create some kind of, I would assume, a public bank to make sure that people don't lose their homes.
The next step, though, you know, or
in a falling market, I'm sorry.
Right, or worker-owned operations so that the incentives are more sound.
Or actually doing things like, you know, even coming together and closing down, you know, say the AmScots and setting up the post office as a public banking system. For the poor.
That's really needed. Yes. Right. No, I'm serious. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, those are things that we can do. And those are things that we don't need huge, government, regulation and bureaucracies for. And those are things that we can, you know, do together in our communities. Even things like, community policing, for example, are taking care of, drug problems or domestic violence are things that we can do.
A lot of people are. I mean, let's be, you know, positive in the sense that there's a bit of a renaissance, even locally here.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, my buddies from Speak Up Florida that I always bring and will be back again. So people that are actually have a, it's difficult. First of all, I want to say it's difficult. Yeah, some people try, no call for action, not allowed, but if you happen to think, you know, go to speakupfl.org, I'll post again, you know, check it out, maybe do something, maybe help. But that's a revolution in the pure sense of the word, right? It takes a long time, decades at least. It doesn't have to be violent, by the way, though often it is, though I would like to think that there's so much violence being propagated. Poverty is violence too. So that I'm not that sensitive to that issue. Sometimes, you know, you have to rise. Against your oppressor.
Well, the violence is dicey. I don't know if you saw this the other day, but there was this armored vehicle driving down Howell Branch Road the other day, and it's got to be from the Middle East, you know, that we brought it home. But I mean, there's this armored vehicle riding down Howell Branch Road, and I just thought to myself, so the middle class are going to rise up, and you have to have this. Kind of vehicle, but then I realized who they are afraid of. In the case of Ferguson or Missouri or something, it is another example of bringing that control home. And I think you're both right. If we don't have the practice of cooperation and democracy among small groups, we're going to lose ability to.
It's a very hard fight. I mean, and we are in difficult, very difficult times. And the environment, of course, is the one scary, scary thing because it's global and it's in a really bad shape. And in history, you see all these civilizations almost always kind of end up either managing a transition due to environmental pressures, right? Or not.
Or not. Or not. I was just going to say.
The pages of history, we don't talk about them much anymore.
Right.
But now if it's global, we can no longer, as before, leave our desiccated valley and start up again somewhere else. So the pressure is definitely on. These environmental broad issues are interconnected. So we have this interconnected crisis and we aren't evil at the mode of a lot of people are indeed doing these kind of things that Jay's been describing.
Community policing,
it's horribly difficult. Hats off and at awe because it's a long term and much suffering before you can get anything. But we can't avoid fundamentally changing our political economic system to better fit the challenges of the changing world.
And to reward.
Otherwise,
and to reward these small kinds of things the way we have been rewarding as we started out. We reward large corporations for
that blocks,
what purpose we have no idea.
Even something like health patents, right?
Yes.
So we could, you know, as Thomas Pogge has argued compellingly, we could change those patents and we could have it so that if you put a medicine on the market and it slows a particular epidemic, say something like HIV, the company that makes the medicine gets the profit. So, and what that does is that it's in that company's best interest to have companies and governments copy the drug, make it available very cheaply, so that they can get a sort of a royalty when the epidemic is slowed, or if you reduce transmission, or what have you. So
instead of seeing it as a competitive loss,
right.
If somebody no, absolutely.
Right.
Here's another example of something that is that served well at another era, and is now just a catastrophe, and just being used as a loophole to literally kill off people, because once again, right, when people don't get proper health care that they could get, and instead of getting that, some people are amassing their second $1 billion.
Exactly.
That is
right.
A violent act. That is equivalent to just, you know, arming yourself and going over to somebody and killing their family and taking their property. I know it's a bit of a weird position,
no,
and sometimes it's maybe very radical in some sense, but we forget it. I think it's kind of the bleeding obvious.
It's no different than standing by and watching the Holocaust.
Yeah, you know,
that's
violence too.
It's
a
not,
kind of a passive violence.
Yeah,
but,
it's not me.
Though,
you know.
No, I think it, in some cases the violence is very active too. I mean, if you think of something, you know, just think of what happens if you don't pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
Think of what happens if, you know, you're paying on more than it's for your home is worth, and you think it's not fair, and you say, look, I'm, you know, we're going to stop here.
You're underwater and walk away.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Right.
And you stop making payments or resist. What happened? You know, the police shows up at your door, or the bank sends the police to your door, the arm of the state.
Even without the proper paperwork,
we know. You know, without the proper paperwork.
Right. Have you seen
the people who aren't even...
Have you seen the film 99 Homes? That's you should see.
No, I put it on my list.
It's just an amazing, exactly what you're talking
right.
about.
But you know, it's a sign of the times. So we were talking about that last week with the current gentrification that's going on in San Francisco right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the economy there, Google for a good example, you know, all these other companies, they're right now being the scapegoats of the developers because, you know, in business, you try to get your best opportunity to, you know, do your profits. And obviously, you know, Google and those companies were offered by the developer and by City Hall, the opportunity to maximize their profits by having their employees there and all that. And what's happening is that, you know, any Mickey Mouse company that comes in, you know, doing an app, you know, however ridiculous they may be and useless, can get all the tax benefits of not paying any taxes.
Seriously.
And all these incentives.
The jobs.
And they go in and they, rent this mega place that basically already, Ellis Act, some of the local people, Ellis Act is basically where Lionel can come in and say, you got a year, you know, you need to get out and here's some chump change right. for your move. And, so these people are coming in with these, Mickey Mouse companies, they take over. And then a year later, they claim bankruptcy because the app didn't yield what it's supposed to be. And then the city and everybody else is left with the ticket.
With the property.
Yeah,
there, right?
yeah. Mm-hmm. And right now, I mean, I'm from San Francisco. I can't afford to go back to San Francisco. And the amount of changes, I mean, the skyline is being changed for one thing. But the amount of rent that you have to pay now, if you're not part of the tech sector, you're on your way out.
Even in the Mission District.
Even in the Mission.
Yeah, right.
I mean, right now, if you're lucky to get an apartment, it probably will be in the Tenderloin.
Yeah.
You know, and you're looking at a square box, you know, with a TV and maybe a pillow to lay your head on.
Like Manhattan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that moves populations differently, right? I mean, more flows adjusting to changing conditions. But again, I mean, where the interconnectedness of everything is the big, big challenge. Because every single effort, how do you stop that? So what, you get some kind of activist, local government in San Francisco, rezoning things. I mean, you could do something.
Sure, you can.
Yeah, I'm very open-minded, radical in a sense, right? So that's why I was like, I'm willing, I'm trying, you know? So when you're absolutely right what you said about, I mean, I tried to defend the man for one. you called in to rain on my
parade. Well, there was the Oakland, it was either the Oakland or the Richmond, I forget his name, but he was trying to do the same thing.
Jerry Brown?
No, well, Jerry Brown's the governor, but I'm thinking of the African-American gentleman that was trying to, they drummed him out of the Obama administration, but he was retrofitting homes, and he was making them energy efficient in Richmond. And,
oh,
and
yes,
East
yes.
Bay, and
is that Jones?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And in a sense, equipping people for the one thing we haven't talked about is the risk of abrupt climate change. And if you're not going to equip people with trying to at least survive that, you might as well just put a gun to their head.
Right, right.
As you're saying, or take their property.
But instead of dealing with these things that, as you pointed out, we know for decades, Stern Report is really like the, to maybe just mention a little footnote on that. That 2005 report, I mean, we've known about these things, some people already since the 70s, right? We're already apparently correctly crying about it. But the Stern Report was a little bit unique at the time, if I remember correctly, because they really kind of, all the great, serious, respectable experts here, no radicals allowed, conservative economists, prominently represented.
People who believe in the market.
Yeah, completely. And they were trying to put out this, be careful, it's not the economy with the nice standard of living or a clean environment, it's our economy absolutely depends on the environment.
That, right. So and maintaining the environment.
These are complements, not substitutes. So that it's not this ideology, but it's much more effective to stop this from happening, any kind of dealing with our problems, to make it about identity politics.
Even the climate issue, if you want to take that issue about green technology and making it cheap, you know, you have a city like Detroit, which was the Motor City.
Yeah.
And that city could have been rebranded into the Green City, where you have green technology coming out of it. You know, I would have this talk with my friends. And even if you believe in the value of the markets and the private sector, right, what creates that? You need a strong state and a strong government to create that. The federal government.
You need an interstate highway system. Yep. I mean, it wasn't built by private enterprise.
Right. The United States government is the biggest buyer of cars.
Why doesn't
the United States government institute, a public works program, right?
Exactly.
Send people back to school for green engineering. You know, you could make green cars and trains and, public
just like
transport.
Just like the CCC.
We could solve our problem. Right. We could even solve, I mean, we're kind of running out of time. Yeah, so I'm going to have to do the cap thing and, tune in next time, anytime. You know, you're always welcome.
Well, just remember, a good environment is a good investment.
Right.
Yes.
So necessary, in fact, to maintain our technological, but major changes will have to be done. This is we can't just dump it on the new generation and then spew hate on those poor millennials. We should be apologizing every day to millennials instead of saying nasty things.
Should be paying them back. Should be paying them to go to school, according to Bernie. Yes. And I think the Germans have it right. Education should be free through the 16th grade.
So we'll pick it up here, and we're feeling for. I wish that Hollande will do something different. It doesn't reduce the horror of what happened to Belgians.
Yeah.
And maybe they will be instrumental in waking up and realizing we have to kind of change the way we do stuff for everybody's benefit.
My thoughts to all those friends and family of the 153.
Yeah, scary
thing. Yeah.
And
anyway,
there'll be more before we're done. Much more.
Anyway, folks, you've been listening to Punkonomics, broadcasting live from WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. The views and opinions stated here today are solely ours, not of the staff or workers at Rollins College or WPRK. We'll see you again next week for some more Punkonomics.